Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for March the 11th, 2022. This is episode 101. On today's show, we'll be talking about the Volkswagen ID. Buzz official reveal, the tease of the Chevy Blazer SS, and the Volvo XC40 Recharge gets a facelift. I'm Dominic Chione, Inside EVs forum moderator and Inside EVs editor. Joining us today is the stupendous Tom Malogny, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the mirthful Mr. Martin Lee from the recently revamped EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of the Out of Spec Studios, from where they produce videos for a growing number of YouTube channels. Okay, so before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to the channel. If you're watching us on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button and ring that bell icon for notifications. If you're watching us on Twitch, and please do that, you can also ring that bell icon for notifications. All right, so with that out of the way, welcome everybody. I laugh when I mention Twitch because we were just talking about that. And to be honest, like, not a whole lot of people watch us on Twitch. I don't know if people watch podcasts generally on Twitch, but we're trying to build that audience. So, but in order to build the audience, you have to have followers to watch it. It's a weird platform. But if you have it, you know, feel free to watch along. All right. So let's kick it off with our comment of the week, or Katwa for short. So last week, Steve B. commented, "Tesla tequila on Tom's shelf. Shots." Excellent suggestion, Steve. Thanks for that. So for a little context, last week we celebrated our 100th regular episode of the Inside EVs podcast. Some of us were drinking champagne first thing in the morning. And by some of us, I mean me. Kyle was fresh out of booze. Martin had some green matcha health drink of some kind. And
awful.
Tom had coffee. However, behind Tom was a bottle of Tesla Tequila, which is an agave tequila añejo that's been aged in French oak barrels and features a dry fruit and light vanilla nose with a balanced cinnamon pepper finish, I'm told. I'm not sure if Tom has special plans for his bottle, but I've seen it available online for about $1,300. But if whoever we're all in the same place at the same time, well, let's just say I'll bring the salt and the lemons.
All right, I'll crack it open for that. If we're ever still right there behind me, if we're ever all together, we'll have to do Tesla tequila shots.
That'd be awesome.
But for now, it's just a prop in the back behind me.
Right. I mean, you could always fill it back up with, like, I don't know, maple syrup, and it would probably still look the same.
How do you know I haven't already done that?
That's true. All right. So let's talk about what we've been driving this week. Kyle, you had put up an interesting video this week with the Mercedes EQS 450 Plus doing a 0 to 100 charging curve test. I don't know if you want to tell us about that. I guess it was hard to find the right charger to actually do this test properly because not all chargers are the same, even from the same company with the same, you know, 350 kilowatt or whatever, you know, power output label that's on there. It's still not all the same. So maybe start with that part.
Yeah. So I think it's important to note that the EQS is the first car that I've tested other than Taycan at low state of charge, pretty much that, well, I guess Taycan does too. It's one of the first cars I've tested that pulls more than 350 amps. And that is because this car is rated for a 200 kilowatt peak charging rate from the manufacturer. And over the last few months, I have driven every version of EQS. I've tried to charge it at least four or five times, and I never have been able to get more than 150, 160 kilowatts. And I'm like, what is going on here? How could they rate this at 200 kilowatts? And then I started looking into it and thinking about it, and I'm like, wait a second. Obviously, this is a 400 volt car. And for it to get 200 kilowatts at 400 volts, you need 500 amps. And so, you know, even though the charger might say 350 on the front of it, 350 kilowatts, that would be, in theory, they could label it at 350 amps at 1,000 volts. And this car is obviously at much lower voltage. So then started my journey of exploration into which charging stations can actually deliver a true 500 amp maximum. And that is the basically spec of the CCS charging handle's maximum power output. And in Europe, for example, Tesla uses CCS. And CCS, of course, does have a 500 amp maximum, but not for Tesla. They push it farther. And so they don't follow the recommended, I believe, Charin standard of a 500 amp maximum. And so I just brought that up because I knew everyone was going to say, well, Tesla does it. Yes, and it's great. So basically, I went to the 350 kilowatt station by my house here in the station in Loveland, Colorado, and plugged it in. And I was like 140, 142 kilowatts, and it's just ramping up a little bit. I'm like, well, we have a 350 amp limitation, and it was on an ABB unit. And since then, Electrify America has confirmed, yeah, you're absolutely right. That charger's derated. And, you know, we're just waiting on a power module or something that they don't know when it'll come in to fix that issue. But the station's technically capable of 500 amps. It's just software limited. But so anyway, I found the only working 500 amp charger in my area. There's actually a few of them down in Denver that just went online from EVgo, and it's in partnership with this Ultium battery pack expansion for charging networks for the GM funded stuff. And I have to say, it was a wonderful charger. It was a Signet unit. They give you all the nerdy data you could want. They give you volts, amps, kilowatts, times there, kilowatt hours delivered, the cost. They even explain what each of these things mean. It really was one of the best user experiences from a software perspective. You know, you don't have to hit the screen every 60 seconds. At the end of your charging session, they even print you out your own charging curve. It's really nice, really well done. So I am now have turned into an EVgo fanboy after this experience. It was really wonderful. And you know, it was just a kind of a hard thing to find, you know, so basically the cars that are going to be affected by this 500 amp situation are going to be i4, iX, EQS, Rivian R1T, R1S. And then of course, anything, you know, like Hummer EV, Silverado EV, since those aren't 1,000 volt cars, they're 800 volt. They're still going to need more than 350 amps to reach 350 kilowatts, maybe not the full 500, but they're going to need quite a bit. And so this is a whole wild west of EV charging right now. Technically, a 350 kilowatt charger could be rated at 350 amps because of 1,000 volts, theoretically, assuming the charger can output that much current at that high voltage, it can be rated for that. And a 500 amp at whatever it is, 700-ish volts, could technically be also a 350 kilowatt charger. So welcome to the Wild West.
That's kind of crazy. It's all over the place. But so what does this mean for like the regular user, like in terms of if they pull up to a charger that's, you know, in a, say in a Taycan that has, you know, it's 350, but it's getting 500 amps like this EVgo charger, or one that gets, you know, 350 amps to like, if they're there for a half an hour, what kind of like roughly, what difference would that make in terms of like miles charged?
Yeah, well, a Taycan, not much, because that's 800 volts. So 350 right. amps at, you know, 720 volt dead on a Taycan, or maybe even high sixes would be pretty good. You know, it'll probably be around 240 kilowatts at that point. And I've seen this many times with Taycan. I'm like, you know, I had this Taycan in many times. I'm finding this thing starting at 240 and it's walking its way up to 270. And it's this amperage limitation that they have. So Taycan's not really affected by it. Ioniq 5 and EV6 are not affected by it because they're pretty much using all of the 350 amps. And it's really the cars that are affected by it are going to be this EQS, the Rivian. I think a lot of people are going to have issues with. Now, keep in mind, like 50 kilowatts doesn't sound like much of a difference, because that's going to be your difference between a 350 amp or a 500 amp on a 400 volt system. It's going to be, you know, about 140 kilowatts to 200 peak, but it's time and it's a big difference. In my opinion, it would be annoying basically to be sitting there with a Rivian with 135 kilowatt hour pack and only charging at 140 kilowatts when I know the thing can do 200.
Right.
I mean, it's worse over here because we have a national network that was 10 years old, got bought last year by GridServe. They're the ones with the electric forecourt idea, and their chargers are great. But because they have to update all of the hardware in the network they bought, the old electric highway, kept the name but replaced the hardware. A lot of those grid connections were done in an EV world of 10 years ago. So I went to go use my first one that's labeled 125 kilowatt chargers. I think they're the ABB Terra somethings. Great units, really great ABB hardware. And plugged the car in. It's getting like 56, 58, 60 kilowatts. And I'm thinking, this is crazy slow. There's something wrong with the charger. And just by chance, happened to go and look at the little sticker on the side. I think it's at the top on the ABB units of what that's rated for. And it was 150 amp charger. And that'll be because the grid connection they've got is that's the limiting factor. And so with the best will in the world, like the MG runs a pretty high voltage, actually about 450 volts. Maybe it was at 420 volts, something that I plugged in, but you know, that's it. That's your max. If you're on a 150 amp unit or a 200 amp unit, if you're lucky on a lot of those older connections, it's a whole nother confusing thing because you turn up, it says 125 kilowatt fast charger. It's going only at half the speed. This is crazy. Well, you know, unless you've got an 800 volt car, you're not going to get anywhere near that.
And that's the thing. And in Germany, when we were using the ENDV chargers, they actually label the charger output for a 400 volt car or an 800 volt class of car. And I thought that was pretty genius in my opinion. I'm like, oh, this makes sense. People get it. These are the classes. And so what I think what we're coming to an agreement with is there's no standard on how to label chargers and we should create one. So I'm going to work on this with some videos over time and, at least share my opinions. I want everyone to share theirs as well. But I think, just to wrap up on this EQS situation, the charging curve was great. Really is a fat charging curve. You can watch that on Out of Spec Reviews if you're really boring, or want to be bored, I should say.
Our audience isn't boring, man.
No, I'm saying if you really want to fall asleep, watch this video. And so the thing with EQS to me, I guess, really my main coming to the end of my week driving it, I've put a lot of miles on it, spent a lot of time with it. It could have been so much better from an engineering perspective because Mercedes has always been the technological leader in automotive for the last 50, 60, 70 plus years with S-Class. It's always been the peak. And then you have EQS that comes out and it's 400 volt. And really the only benefit they would have had to go with an 800 volt system would have been more efficient charging, of course, just in transmission, but also, this 350 amp limitation wouldn't have been a big deal for it. I'm not sure it would be worth it for them to spend all the X number of money in componentry and everything to make it an 800 volt system, but it's an S-Class. It should just do it regardless of the price. And so I think that's, to me, it's like, it's a good car, great car, really is. But like not the peak in terms of technological advancement. And that's where it honestly should be.
So I think the whole industry will go to 800 volts at least at some point. It just makes more sense.
Maybe
it's already moving that way.
Yeah, I guess why not, right? It's not right now. It's more expensive to make an 800 volt system architecture because a lot of the third party suppliers that supply the supporting hardware are not producing enough 1,000 volt capable items, and then they're also more expensive to go for those, like significantly more. But of course, this will adapt and change. But I think all these cheap EVs, city cars and stuff, there's no reason for them to go any higher voltage than 350 volts. Like my smart car, I don't even think is a 300 volt system car. Like it's a really low voltage car, and it just doesn't need to have a high voltage because it just drives around the city and level two charges. And I think we'll see more low power, smaller, sort of inexpensive city cars where we don't need to spend the money on high voltage.
Yeah, I agree with Kyle. I don't think necessarily everybody is going to be at 800 or higher 900 volt systems moving forward. I mean, maybe way down the road we might get to that. But one of the really important things that Kyle mentioned, and there's no excuse for Mercedes because it's a high end, top of the line luxury vehicle. But a lot of the reason why some of the OEMs hadn't gone there already was the cost of the components. Porsche and Lucid, for instance, they had to design and make all of their own components because there was nothing off the shelf. that was available, you know, and that's expensive doing that. So, you know, we're talking about trying to get the cost down of electric vehicles. They're already more expensive than comparable gas cars. And now you're saying, okay, now you've got to in-house design all these extra components and it's going to add cost. So we might get there, but, you know, for the immediate future, I don't think it's going to be a fait accompli that every new EV coming out is going to have an 800 or higher volt system. One other thing I'm interested in hearing from Kyle was, Kyle, we talked about the how long it would take to charge, that it's kind of an annoyance if the charging station can't deliver the full power that some of these new EVs coming out would be able to. Rivian, BMW's vehicles, the EQS. Did you do, I know you've done the full charging session on this EVgo station that could deliver the full power. Did you also do a full charging curve on an Electrify America charging station that was derating the power?
Yes, but I can't find the footage. So I did this months ago with an EQS. Actually, when we held that EV Media Summit thing, I did it with the EQS there, plugged in at zero, and I genuinely don't know where the footage went. And I wanted to, I've been looking for it, trying to dig it up because I wanted to compare the difference.
That's what I was getting at.
And the thing is, it holds more than 150 kilowatts all the way past 50%, almost to 60%. So from 0 to 60%, you are limited. And then everything after that is the same, of course.
Yeah. So I'll be getting an EQS soon, in a couple of weeks. So if you can't find it, I will do that here, and then we'll put them together, yours and mine together on a graph, and see what the comparison is. But I'm not as worried as you were, because personally, I mean, yes, it's a premium vehicle. You want to charge as quickly as possible. But I think most people aren't going to notice that big of a difference time-wise. I could be wrong when we put these things together. And I know you said it's a fat curve, so that's leaning towards maybe you being more right than I am. But it'll be interesting to see. I think the 10 to 80%, which is what most people really going to aim at, the 0 to 100, we can throw that out. We do that just to print out a full charging curve. But the 10 to 80%, which I think most people focus on, I don't think it'll be more than 5 to 7 minutes longer, even if you pull up to a charging station that can't deliver the full power. Now, for you and me, that's an eternity, because we talk minutes and we keep charging these. We compare them to different vehicles. But I think for a lot of EQS owners on a road trip, they wouldn't even notice the difference. And let me tell you, I think I told you guys this offline. I may have said it in last week's podcast. I don't think so. But this week I was doing charger recordings, and I pulled up to an Electrify America charging station. There was a guy in a Taycan, and I noticed he was charging. He was at a low state of charge, like 28% state of charge or 30% state of charge. And the car was pulling 151 or 152 kilowatt. And I'm looking at it. I couldn't help myself. I had to go over, and he was at 150 kilowatt DC fast charger. So I had to go over and knock on his window and say, you know, I hit the mind my own business, but there's 2 350 kilowatt stations open over there. You should really plug in over there and look, because it doesn't make a difference. And I was like, it kind of does. And he's like, listen, I've charged at those tons of times, even in this, because we got into the temperature thing, even in August, he goes, this car has never pulled more than 155 to 150 kilowatt. I said, well, there's something wrong with your car then. Because he's like, and he named the places he's been to, the 350 kilowatt stations. I was like, take that to Porsche, because I've charged a lot of Taycans. And his attitude was just kind of like, this is fast enough. It really, what's it gonna save me? 5 minutes of time? He's like, right. You know, I've seen some of the videos out there and everything. He goes, I'm here like 25 to 75%, something like that. He goes, it's not even worth it. So it depends on who you and me analyze and crunch these numbers like religion, you know. But I think the average person isn't going to really, it won't make that much of a difference if it's 5 to 7 minutes. Now, if it's 10 to 12 minutes, okay, we'll talk about it. But let's see when we put those things right up against each other and see the 10 to 80% difference.
Yeah, I think that'll be interesting. And I totally agree. I think most people just want it to plug in and to work. And I think most people would be happy at 100 kilowatts. You know, but the thing is, from my perspective, none of this will get better unless we push it. And we make more people aware. Some people may not know. A lot of people might think, hey, this thing says it should do 200 kilowatts, regardless if it saves them time. And then they're going to think it's the car and they're going to try and warm it up. Like I would been doing for the last, you know, few months until I was like, oh crap. Even though this charger says it's rated for 500 amps, it might be physically or software derated. And that was the case. And the thing is, most 350 kilowatt stations across the country, at least in my experience, are derated to 350 amps. I think it's only the new Signets with the newest software update, and we heard through the grapevine, maybe some Canadian BTC stuff, but pretty much everything else on Electrify America, and I hope they correct us if we're wrong here. I don't want to say this as fact because I haven't tested every station, but I think there's a large percentage of them that have this 350 amp limit. I know a lot of the new EVgo installs, they're using, I think, Delta or Signet units, and those can all do 500 amps, at least from what I know. So anyway, that's the situation. I just think we need to just educate people about this stuff. Whether or not it actually makes a difference in the real world, I totally agree with you, Tom. I think it's a few extra minutes, and it's not not a big deal.
Is it the hard? Do you think it's the hardware cost, or is it the grid connection? And considering
the grid connection.
Considering we're doing a mini series on infrastructure, we haven't asked this question yet. And also, one of my podcast sponsors is a company that sells hardware, so I can always ask, you know, those guys, they're experts. But do you think the limiting factor is what they can hook up to at the site, and then the juice they can get? Because you start to get to 500 amps, and you want to put in a bank of 6, 8, or 10 chargers, and you get into some juicy grid connections there, aren't you? I guess.
Yeah, but they already have the grid connections. That's not the issue at all. It's just that the chargers don't have the push, because keep in mind, they have four, you know, 350 kilowatt chargers, or four 150. One, if I'm the only car there, it should just dump everything in there.
So in that case, it's the availability of the hardware, the cost of the chargers? What is it?
Both. Okay. And so what EA told me, and again, I don't want to say this came from anyone technical on their team, but they said, hey, we're just waiting for another power module to be installed. And so essentially that would just bump up to 500 amps from 350, because they'd probably come in packs. And so whether or not they're derating it to prolong the charger's life, it hasn't been an issue. This has not been an issue until EQS and until Rivian. No cars could max these things out until right about now. And I have a Rivian coming on like a few days from now. I'm taking on a big road trip. And actually, yeah. We'll talk about that.
We'll talk about it next time.
I don't want to share
too much. Maybe in a couple of weeks. I don't know.
But this, I think, is going to be a limiting factor on this road trip.
And Tony S. just said the grid connection is the limiting factor. Tony, it's not. Trust me. It's not the. It's the hardware. And the fact of the matter is, this, as Kyle just said, and that he just made the point of this whole discussion, it hasn't been an issue until right now. And Electrify America, this is all my opinion, didn't focus on this because it wasn't an issue. You know, they're focusing on the issues. Now, all of a sudden, these cars are coming to market that can stress their units, actually can take in more power than the units can deliver. And now they're like, okay, we need to make sure these can deliver the full amount of power. I fully believe that they understood this from the beginning, that obviously the engineers knew that the charging stations were going to be limited with 400 volt systems, and they just kicked the can down the road. They just said, you know what, we'll deal with this when it happens. Now it's happening, and now they're going to upgrade the stations to be able to deliver the extra amount of power. So I simply think it was a fact that, you know, when Electrify America came out a couple of years ago, as we've said many times, and we're very critical of Electrify America with reliability and things like that at sometimes, but at sometimes we also have to say, hey, they were putting stuff in the ground that nobody else was. They had to design the stuff, they had to make the components. That's why they went with a multiple of different providers, because no one manufacturer could make enough equipment. And I also think they wanted to see, okay, who was going to be best for long term. It was almost like they gave out four contracts and they said, you know, we'll stick long-term with the guys that actually deliver and make good equipment that's reliable. And they've already eliminated one of their original four manufacturers. They only have three now. So I fully believe that they said, okay, maybe that was going to hold them back in the beginning, or it was going to cost a lot more to have the higher powered hardware. And they said, we'll deal with these 400 amp, the 400 volt battery packs when they can pull more than 200 kilowatts when it comes. We're here now, and now they're going to upgrade. We'll see. But I expect new equipment, like Kyle just pulled up at with EVgo, knowing that there are charging, there are cars that can accept that power. New equipment in the ground now should all be able to deliver the 200 kilowatts, even if you have a 400 volt system.
Yeah, and EVgo is basically being paid by GM to install a lot of this stuff in some sort of partnership. I don't know the extent of it, but basically GM's not going to pay to put in chargers that don't max out a Hummer EV or Silverado EV and things like that. So those are going to do 500 amps for sure, or at least more than 350.
Those have like 200 kilowatt hour batteries, so they need as much juice as fast as they can get it in there. Just to underline that point, Scott B, left a comment, as someone who manages an EV infrastructure program for major utility, it's not the grid connection. When we design the interconnection for any fast starting station, it's a support the max kilowatt. It's to support the max kilowatt.
Basically, yeah, it's not the grid connection. Now, there are scenarios where they will dynamically limit the total site output around demand charges, but you're probably not going to hit that with just one car. And so you probably need a few cars there for them to pull it down. And also they can have battery pack storage on site, but that's for our Monday shows.
So, and just a note. So last Monday, we didn't have a show. We had to postpone it, and hopefully, I'm not sure if we have one next Monday. Tom, do we have anything next Monday?
Working on it. It's not, don't have any clarification on yet, unfortunately. So at this point, it's Friday. I'm going to say it's probably not going to be a go for next week yet.
So
we'll resume the infrastructure series as soon as we have a guest that's available to show up.
And we can all do it. We have a lot. We're going to be a lot of us are going to be pretty busy the next couple of weeks. So just like click that bell icon for notifications, and then you'll know when we have a guest on and be able to catch that. I think we'll be speaking with ChargePoint probably next though. All right. So real quickly, so the EQS 450 plus. So what kind of 0 to 100 time did you get?
I think it was 1 hour, 17 minutes. EVgo shuts off after 1 hour, which is really freaking annoying. So we had to reconnect the whole situation. And I heard during peak times, they shut off after 30 or 45 minutes. EVgo, we need a special card that does not shut off after an hour. So please get that to us by like Wednesday. that won't happen. So yeah, great charging curve. Sits at 200 kilowatts, still 40%. Ramps down as you would expect. Very solid, very repeatable. Doesn't really even overheat the car. Fans kicked on at like 50% state of charge. It was fine. And so, great charging curve.
So if you roll up with 10% and you want to charge to 80%, but how long do you think you're going to sit there?
I don't know. I didn't do the math. Because 10 to 80 in my mind doesn't make sense. Why would you charge to 80? This is a 0 to 50% on a road trip. I understand some people like this 10 to 80 thing. I don't like it. I know that's going to become the industry standard, but I'm going to hold strong and go against it because I think that's silly. For me, the reason I do a charging curve is because it's not for the general public. They just plug in and don't worry about it. It's for the nerds who are into charging curves. And if you're like me, you're plugging in zero on road trips anyway, and you want to rocket this charging curve until it starts to taper and go. And so this is a 0 to 50% unplug and hammer to the next station kind of car.
All right. So Tom, I understand Ford Pro launched a comprehensive suite of commercial EV chargers this week, and you wrote that up for the Inside EVs website. So maybe you can tell us just a little bit about that.
Sure. And the point really wasn't to talk about the specific hardware that they launched.
Right.
What the point though that I thought was very important was. The fact that Ford is investing a lot of energy into being like just an end-to-end provider of charging for their fleet customers. That's really important. I have had a lot of conversations with companies here in New Jersey that want to electrify their fleet, businesses that have fleets of vans, that have trucks, even a bus company here in New Jersey that's a very large bus company. And one of the biggest issues is they're like, okay, yeah, we get this electrification. We're all in. We'll buy electric buses. We'll buy electric vans. But we don't know anything about charging them. Like the refueling the diesel and gas vehicles is so easy. They have a pump behind their facility, and they fill up their own fuel. And if it's a small company, they just go to gas stations. They have a corporate credit card, and that's it. It's not an issue. But when you buy these electric vehicles, you're just beginning to have to deal with how you're going to manage your fleet. It's you're adding problems that the companies didn't have before. So what Ford's doing is they're having this holistic approach where they have a range of different equipment from, you know, 11 kilowatt AC level 2 chargers all the way up to 180 kilowatt DC fast chargers. And they'll have somebody come out and do a site analysis of your facility. They'll recommend what equipment you can have. They can help you install it. And then once it's installed, they have the back-end software so that fleet managers can manage their charging and save money with time of use, battery buffering, a range of things they can offer. And this is unique because the company's doing it. And typically in the past, third-party companies do this, like Amply Power. They'll come in and analyze your facility and do it for you. But what I liked about this was, you know, the company has a relationship with Ford. You know, they buy Ford vehicles, 20, 30, 40, 100 trucks. And so they trust Ford. They trust them for service and everything. And this is just an extension. Ford saying, look, we'll take care of all of that for you. We'll even help you with the software to manage your fleet once it's done. This is one-stop shopping. You don't have to, you know, talk to this new company that you've never dealt with before that's based in California or wherever. It's here. It's you know, your local Ford guys are going to hold your hand and help you make this electric transition. And to me, that's what was so powerful about this. I didn't really get into the equipment itself. It was just that Ford is going to tell their customers, look, we got your back. You want to switch to electrification, we'll help you through every step of the way. And that's really important.
Great points. Yeah, because the hardware itself wasn't, it was kind of interesting, you know, 11 kilowatt AC charger, the Ford Pro Station that comes with the Lightning, and then there's a few different, you know, what, up to 150 kilowatts, do you say, chargers?
Up to 180 kilowatts in 30 kilowatt increments. So there's all different levels of power that the units can deliver. And like I said, the big part about it is they're not just selling you stuff. They're going to help you. They're going to do site analysis. They're going to help you decide how much you need, where you need to install it, help you with your grid interconnections. You know, I mean, sure, they'll have an electrical contractor that they've contracted to do this. And then they're going to provide the software management, which is paramount, that these fleet managers can actually understand their energy use and massage it, because you'll be able to save a lot of money on when you charge and how you charge. And that's something that, like I said earlier, these companies want to go to electrification, but they don't know anything about that. And this is giving them, like I said, a trusted partner that they've been dealing with for years. Said, look, I'll hold your hand. I'll walk you through this. We'll show you how you know, you don't have to contact anybody else. We'll take care of everything for you. Now, of course, customers could say, you know, we don't need Ford to do this. We're going to hire an outside firm. But the fact that Ford is providing the service, I think it's, and financing for it, because that's a huge question when people are buying all these vans. Oh, these vans are great. You know, they're going to save us money. Electricity is 11 cents a kilowatt hour. Gas is 5 cents a gallon. But, well, wait a minute. I've got to install $700,000 worth of charging equipment on my property, you know, so, you know, Ford's going to help them get available rebates, all of that stuff, because right now there's a ton of money out there for infrastructure in federal, state, even county, even utility based. So, you know, yeah, I think it's huge that Ford is doing this. I think it was a bigger story than what it got in the news, I guess, because it was Ford Pro, not Ford proper. And, you know, this is a commercial side of the business, but I was really stoked about it.
That's a huge market waiting to be conquered. And yeah, if they can get the message out to commercial, you know, businesses that they have this like overall solution, they could really corner that, I think. Sounds like, I don't know. Does anyone else have no one else really has a commercial side like this, do they? Of the major automakers? GM?
Well, they have commercial divisions, but we haven't seen anything like this electrification yet.
Yeah.
But Ford's first to market with the Transit, you know, and Lightning coming out now. So, you know, you would expect them to be first on this. But let's see if the other guys follow. I mean, I think if they don't, it gives Ford a distinct advantage when you're trying to move your fleet to electric.
I guess if I was a competitor, I would look at being able to produce, the only way to get in there really is to like being able to produce more vehicles and actually be have vehicles to sell. So, I mean, that's a huge part of the whole equation as well. Just having the trucks to sell to, you know, because everybody's pretty limited still at this point. All right. So let's move on a little bit. Oh, so yesterday, Lucid CEO Peter Rawlinson put out this video for Lucid. CEO of Lucid. He's also the CTO, Chief Technical Officer, I believe. Is that right?
Yes.
Tom? Right. So he put out this video yesterday. Man, it's great. Even if you're not like a EV geek, I found it pretty interesting just on the, I don't know what level, just on an entertainment sort of level. I mean, it wasn't, you know, there's no like song and dance, but just, it's just walking us through, you know, electricity, batteries, how the Lucid battery pack is designed. And he even gave some proprietary information about their own designs and things. It was
One thing I thought was interesting was he got into pretty good detail. This is like the perfect 101 course that I want to hand to someone that says, hey, before you watch one of our charging curves or before a range test or something, can you just watch this and understand this? But there was still more to learn in here, even from guys like us, because Lucid shared a couple interesting tidbits. One that I thought was really interesting was the wire bonds from the battery pack to the bus bar. They have one fused wire bond that's pretty small and highly resistive, and they have another one that's pretty beefy that can flow pretty nicely. And I was like, well, there's just a little inch of efficiency right there, and they can do that because they produce everything in-house, and it just shows their engineering might in that department. It was really impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. Just if you haven't watched this, just watch it. I mean, honestly, we don't have to go into detail and talk about everything that was said in the video, but it was a masterclass. And Rawlinson, in my opinion, you know, as respected as he was after this, I think people are going to really look at him as you know, he even has more credit because, you know, it's one thing to understand what's going on. It's another thing entirely to be able to explain it so people understand it. You know, I struggle with that sometimes. I think when I do instructional videos and EV charging videos, I think sometimes I watch it and I'm like, wow, I didn't explain that well. You know, I didn't say what was in my mind, you know, and I don't think people are going to understand the point I was trying to make. But Rawlinson, it just is natural. Like he's like a college professor, you know, and
but not boring.
Way he explained everything was, you know, everybody. And like Kyle said, Kyle even learned something. And, you know, if Kyle learned something, Kyle knows a lot about batteries and charging. And the funny thing is, I tweeted about this last night and I said, look, if you don't learn something from this video, you're either much smarter than the average person or you really weren't paying attention when you watched it, because this is packed with really cool information from the most basic knowledge that you should kind of understand about EVs to, you know, little real technical tidbits that Kyle picked up on. So, you know, just go watch this thing is all I can tell you. And it, you know, the thing is, this is going to be a series. They're making 10 videos. Rawlinson's going to do 4 or 5 of them. There's going to be other people in the videos. I almost think they set the bar too high because, like, you know, this was awesome. And I'm interested to see how they follow it up. I almost can't imagine the rest of the videos in the series are going to be as well done
It wasn't aimed at the entry level viewer. It was aimed at someone who already has a general understanding of EVs. It fixes some misconceptions and it put it in this really nice package. And the thing, you know, the motivation behind Peter for doing this and Lucid, I think, is something that we can all really appreciate because it makes our jobs easier. It focuses on if everyone can just get to this level of understanding, right? This basic knowledge, then our coverage can go deeper. And so what we really need to do is just force everyone to watch this 50 times. I sent it to my dad because it was perfect for him, because he is getting into electric cars now, but he's not quite sure of voltage versus amps versus how does this affect my charging curve? What actually gets hot? How are the cells cooled? What are the different strategies? And so he can watch this and now we can have much more meaningful conversations with our time. And it's a really wonderful tool that I'm going to send to everyone.
Yeah, he lays it all out there, like right from the foundation of it. Watts, what are watts? What are, you know, everything is like all there. I'm going to watch it again. I watched it last night. I'm going to watch it again at least once because, like you said, there's a bunch of stuff in there.
There's one more Lucid piece that I don't think we're planning on talking about, but since we're on the topic of Lucid, sure. Did you all watch the Hagerty Lucid review by any chance?
I did.
That
because
was
you tweeted about it.
The finest automotive review or impressions video, whatever you want to call it, that I have ever watched in history. It was better than Top Gear. It was awesome. They were drifting around Lucids. They had a Rivian towing a Lucid. The filming was amazing. And yeah, really sets the benchmark, I think, for what a automotive review should look like, in my opinion. Some of you guys may know we've been doing a lot of stuff at Out of Spec here, and this is what we have our eyes on, is stuff like this, maybe once a week or once every 2 weeks, a special. And, you know, it's going to take time to get there. But, like, this was so epic on so many levels.
I think Inside EVs will have a post with that video on it later today. I thought it was super entertaining. I'm not sure if it, like, I prefer to watch it, like, Auto Get Fool with Thomas. It's, like, I think it's maybe my favorite. Or Doug DeMuro. Some people like Doug DeMuro a lot. I know you do. But
well, that's why there's different reviewers.
Right.
There's not one reviewer that anyone watches.
But for entertainment and the production values, man, this was pretty awesome.
And it's not like it's Top Gear. Like, they had two camera people. That's what's crazy to
really?
Me.
Really? That was two camera people?
Two camera people. Man. One director, one guy who wrote it and presented it, and then two camera people.
The writing was pretty good. The writing was pretty good. I thought they could have used the it's a little bit guy-ish in some places, but yeah.
Okay, but it's a beautiful review. Forget about what's inside of it. Just turn the audio off and just watch it.
Yeah, no, it's great
just
cinematography.
In terms of filming is what I'm saying was wonderful.
Right. Definitely, yeah. All right. Anything else, Martin? Did you drive anything this week? You're on mute, yeah.
We got the 1 second. He's
1 second. That was like 5 seconds. Okay. I couldn't unmute myself. I had you off my screen.
Oh, I'm sorry.
What did I drive this week? I'm not sure I've done too much this week at all. As you guys know, I handed back my buddy's original Arniq, which I've fallen in love with its 20-something kilowatt hour battery, just because how efficient it is and because it's just a load of car for the money. What I have been doing this week is getting my Renault Zoe ready to sell. Second Renault Zoe that we've had, battery lease. It's 2.5 years old now, 15,000 miles. And as you guys know, we bought the MG. We need more family room. And so no point having a car on the driveway, which we just don't drive anymore. So I've been getting that ready. So getting all the little dinks and dents out with my buddy Richard, who you guys met when he came over, Kyle, to your media summits. Richard has an EV dealer.
Simons?
Yes, Richard Simons. So he sells a ton of used EVs, and his place is like 10 minutes from mine. So he's got a guy. Obviously, he's got a guy and a girl for everything, but he's got one of these magicians that takes out the car park door dents, which looks so unsightly. But I swear to God, this car looks brand new. And and the wheel had been had an argument with a curb when my wife was driving it. So, or maybe it was me, I don't know. And so that got, those are like diamond cut, the Zoe wheels. So a little bit harder to get right, but it looks like the car looks like new. So, we paid, what do we pay? It's battery lease, which takes $5,000 or $6,000 off the new price. Cause you're then paying £50 a month to Renault Financial Services. We paid like $13,000 for it. 2.5 years ago, and I went on Auto Trader this week to have a look for that. So, you know, what are the comps? What we're going to list it for? I'll probably give it to Richard to put inside his amazing showroom, so it's dry this time of year. And actually, if a customer wants to buy it, he can sort out finance, and you know, he gets his like 1% or something. So it makes it easier to know a car dealer. And like the average price is between $14,500 and $15,000.
So you're going to make a profit after 2 years.
A car that I've driven 15,000 miles because. Gas prices over here are, well, equivalent $9 a gallon equivalent. We pay a lot of tax anyway, but heading towards £2 a litre for petrol and diesel.
£2 a litre.
So that's super high
Yeah.
London has a low emission zone. Many cities are having low emission zones where, you know, you can drive into the center of the city, but you're paying 10 or 12 pounds a day. They're using the number plate recognition cameras. They just send you a bill. Right. Hey, you drove into London.
Hey, Martin, 10 quid. What happens with the battery lease to the next owner? Because this Smart tried this in the US, and then all of the secondhand owners were like, you're sending me a bill for the battery? Come and take it out of my car. I'm not paying that. Like, you know, do they have to like be approved with the company, or how does that work?
No. Well, I'm on the hook for it until they agree to take. So I'm £50 a month. I have to pay Renault Financial Services, separate kind of credit organization, I guess. And then when I sell it, there's a form that we fill out. Like when you, if it goes to a dealer or the next person, we fill out the form, my details, their details, send it off to Renault, and then they'll start getting the bill. But yeah, my original Zoe with a 22 kilowatt hour pack, I gave that back to my buddy who's got a Renault dealership, a franchise dealership, and he hooked me up with the new one. So I just gave it back to him and said, oh, you sort the paperwork. So this one I'll be selling privately. Never done it before. I'm sure it can't be a big deal. It should be pretty smooth. Renault, by the way, have been calling me to buy out the battery.
Oh, that's
what they want. They don't want to be on the hook for it.
Oh, no. Yeah. No. I think because Nissan got out of this, you know, the early lease Leaf batteries were leased. And I get the feeling, I'd happily be wrong, I get the feeling that Renault will continue to lower that buyout price until at some point they say to all the Zoe owners, have the battery. Like, this is just too much hassle.
That's what Smart did.
Right? I'm waiting for. That's what I'm waiting for. But yeah, like the price has already gone down, the buyout price. And it was still very expensive. As in, what I would pay Renault, I wouldn't then be able to add that to the resale of a price a car, because actually the battery owned ones called the I version, but the battery owned ones are only on for like 17 or 18 grand. And there's meant to be a £5,000 or £6,000 delta between those two. So the battery lease is actually very attractive to people. And I can't get over making money on an electric car that I've owned for 2.5 years. That's stupid.
If you buy out your battery pack, does yours then become an I, or is it valued at the lease?
Yeah, no. So I could buy out the battery pack and then I own the whole vehicle.
And then it's an I.
Yeah, then it becomes an I, and then I sell it on and somebody owns the whole thing. But for many people, it's not, the numbers do not stack up. Even Renault would have to half the price that they were when they called me.
That would be tough to enforce in the US. And I think Smart proved it, because, you know, there's very common cases of lease transfers in the US where someone leases a car and they transfer the remaining portion to someone else, and they have to be approved with BMW Financial or Mercedes-Benz Credit or whatever it is. But for a component of a vehicle to then have a separate sublease on top of the, right, I just signed the paperwork, which means I own this vehicle in full. There's not like a little subsection on these buyer's orders really that say, I own this vehicle in full, but someone else owns this component and I agree to then pay them, but they don't have any of my details, so I'm not going to pay it, and good luck getting the car back.
Right. I could never really figure out how battery leasing made any sense. It just makes everything more complicated. Now we have like this kind of issue, but good for you. And I really hope you get extra money for your car. I mean, and interesting that situation is the same in the UK as here. You're on mute.
I don't want to make a profit. So I'm not, right. I'm going to sell it for what I can sell it.
Why do you mean you don't want to make a profit?
No. Don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong.
He's a communist.
Yeah, let's all lowball Martin for his the lowest bidder wins here.
You damn Europeans giving their cars away. No, don't get me wrong. I would like to sell it for as much as I can, but I don't want to make I don't want EVs to be this expensive. We need EVs, the secondhand market, to be going down, not going up.
It's not just EVs. So I have a 2016 Toyota Tacoma TRD Sport, pretty loaded. And I'm getting ready to sell it because my Lightning goes into production May 16th. So, you know, I'm going to probably sell it in April. So I just started looking at used car prices for 2016 Toyota TRD Sports. Excellent condition. TRD. It's pretty loaded too. 63,000 miles. So I've had this thing 6 years now. Okay. So I paid $32.5 for it. The sticker price was like $35 back in 2016. I paid $32.5 for it. Go look on Auto Trader or the websites that have, like, you know, cars listed in my area. The average price for a 2016 TRD Sport with the options I have, 60,000 miles, is like $33,000 to $34,000. It's more than what I paid for it. It's crazy. Right. So it's not just EVs. That's just the state of affairs on used vehicles today.
And those Tacomas already had, like, what they call it, the taco tax. You know, they always had crazy high resale value anyway. So
they always did. I would, in normal times, I probably could have sold this for about $25,000, which is fantastic for a six-year-old car that you paid $32,000 for. Freeze, you'll only lose $7,000, $1,200 a year. That's way higher than average resale. But in these crazy times with shortages now, I was shocked. Before I looked at it, I was like, geez, I hope it's close to 30. You know, that would be amazing if I only lose like $3,000. There are some my year that are like 36. That's nuts. So I think I'm just going to post it for like 33, which is like the average price. And I know mine is like probably in better condition than the average because I really take care of my cars and wax them and detail them all the time and always oil changes and everything. So, that's going to be getting put up pretty soon. But it's not just EVs, Martin. It's used vehicles.
Wow. Oh, and other news. Home battery goes in Monday. I'll give you a full report next week. So a bit more solar. So another 3 kilowatts of solar, which will give us a 6.5 kilowatt peak.
Oh, it's a big system.
And then a 10 kilowatt hour battery. It's a Solar Edge one, not a Tesla Powerwall, Solar Edge battery. Okay. It's on the DC side. So it comes in from the panels into the battery inverter to my house and then back again so I can charge the battery up overnight. It's cheap rate at 5 pence and we're paying 25 pence during the day. Crazy prices at the minute. And hopefully April to September-ish, we can go off grid with the amount of what we use. Hopefully we'll wait and see, but home battery storage, it's the dream, right?
Yeah, it is.
That's awesome. And Solar Edge makes really good equipment. The interesting thing is I had a deal with them 2.5 years ago. They actually reached out to me and they wanted to, I have a solar system on my house already, a 9 kW system. They wanted to come put in that whole battery backup and system for free. They said, would you do a video series on this, on our equipment and all this stuff? They also sell a solar charger that you, electric car charger that you connect to their system. And, you know, it'll charge the car specifically on solar electricity, all this stuff. So we actually signed a contract. This was in January of 2020. And we signed a contract. They started shipping me some of the components, small pieces, components like, and they had two visits to my house with their local installer. They looked at my system. They spec'd everything out. We actually went and filed for permits to do all this work. As I said, that was in January of 2020.
And then what happened?
March of 2020, all of a sudden, radio silence. Emails going back and forth. They're not responding. Finally, like a month later, I get a correspondence from somebody else in the company. They like laid off, as soon as COVID started, they like laid off the whole team that was working on these type of projects. And so the person reached out to me, they're like, okay, I see we had some kind of deal with you, but as you know, like this, the people, all your contacts no longer work for Solar Edge. Can you tell me what you were going to do? And we'll pick this project up. It may be another 6 or 8 months. So I said, sure. I explained everything to them. They said, okay, great. We'll get back to you. Never heard from them again. Like 8 or 9 months later, I pinged them with an email. I'm like, just want to know, is this going to happen? I have like some of your equipment you mailed here, you sent here. It was all just small stuff, nothing worthwhile. And no response. So, I almost had the system that you're getting done here here and that 2 years ago. But, I think if COVID would have happened like 3 months later, they would have been here installing. You know, it might have been too late at that point to stop it because we were pulling permits and everything.
Wow. John says, it might happen. You never know. I mean, battery shortages are just everywhere. So component shortages, enough batteries to run an air conditioner. The weather here doesn't get crazy hot or crazy cold. So we need an air conditioner, maybe 1 to 2 months of the year. if you want to feel more comfortable, the only place that I have got an air conditioner is in the studio, which is in a separate building at the bottom of my garden, which has a flat roof. I have a felt flat roof. It's brick built, but it just soaks up heat. And so for 3 or 4 months of the year, it'll get 30 degrees in here and it's just sweating. I got lights and the camera.
30 degrees Celsius.
Yeah. It's stinking hot. And I got my server stuff. It's all out here. So I do have air conditioning out here, and it's a heat pump air conditioner, so it provides my heat in the winter as well. I run it for maybe 2 or 3 hours a day on a Friday afternoon when we're talking. I'll run it because it's just, you know, otherwise I'm just sitting here, you know, with my t-shirt off, and no one wants to see that.
Right. So on that note, let's talk about. Oh yeah, news.
Nathan says, "Move along, guys, move along." Where's Nathan, the ID Buzz?
Nathan Green comments, "ID Buzz, Blazor EV. Those are our big stories. So let's get to them because we're already deep into the show. So, all right. So the big news this week is the reveal of the launch of the VW ID Buzz. We talked with Clinton Simone here on the podcast just a couple of weeks ago about his driving impressions. At the time, though, it was hidden between a rainbow wrap. They had brought him over to, I think, the UK. To drive one around a little bit. Mm. But, you know, we couldn't really see it. And there were a lot of other details that we didn't get it. You know, we couldn't see. So, but now we can in all its funky glory. And I've got to say, I think it looks pretty great. Now, this is the rear-wheel drive short wheelbase that will be available first in Europe, I believe, later this year. Correct me if I'm wrong, Martin.
Yep. So our production starts, I believe, September.
Right. Okay. So when it comes to the U.S., the wheelbase will be 3 inches longer, and there will be bigger battery options for longer range. Right now, I think they're 77 kilowatt-hour batteries, something like the same as what's in the ID4. So,
yep, that's correct. Only spec that we know that we're getting so far is that size. It's got to have a bigger battery on the wheelbase for the U.S. market. Must have.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, when it comes to the U.S., it'll have that longer wheelbase. And so I think we'll get as big probably as 111 kilowatt hours. I think a Volkswagen person said to Bjorn Newland something about an 85 kilowatt hour battery as well. So
I didn't hear that.
Yeah. See,
the 77 kilowatt hour battery, that's usable. It's actually an 82 kilowatt hour battery as it is.
Okay,
so,
right.
You know, 85 wouldn't be that much bigger. You know, I don't think they would add, you know, 7, 8 kilowatt hour and say that that's their upgraded battery. It's like one module.
Yeah. No.
It did seem kind of odd. I'm not sure. Maybe I should just watch that again. But even this. Even like this, I think it looks pretty good. I don't know if you want to bring Clint back up. So Clint did a special video for Inside EVs. They let him in the room with one, and he did a lot of filming and going through it. And there was lots of B-roll from Volkswagen itself, you know, showing the inside and outside. The interior is super interesting. Lots of colors and different textures. And I think they'll be selling as many as they can make for a while. So, Kyle, I believe you said that this is like the ultimate EV for dog owners, and it does have a huge space behind the rear seats. So what else do you like about this?
Well, I think I'm pretty bummed we don't get the cargo version here in the U.S., but I'm also kind of excited because we'll get the long wheelbase, hopefully bigger battery pack. And you guys know this is right up my alley. I love everything about this. It doesn't need to be fast. The Volkswagen van has never been about speed. I thought Doug DeMiro had an amazing review of this. He went through every single little thing. I watched it twice, really enjoyed that. So that's the video I would say, you know, watch whatever you want, but that one really had a ton of detail in it and overall was really cool. This van's great for dogs, Dominic, like you had mentioned. And I think you can just pull the back seats out, probably have to unbolt them or something. Back seats always come out. And it was, we could put like a little bathtub in there for dogs. I don't know. There's so many cool things you could do with this.
I think campers will be, I also just to get back to the cargo. I mean, they got to bring that to the States. They got to bring a cargo with a long wheelbase to the States. I don't see why they.
Well, there's a lot of taxes when you have a non-US van. And so like the Sprinters, for example, are assembled, a lot of them here in South Carolina.
Right.
And here, I mean, in the United States. So they basically send the chassis over from Germany and final assembly. Mine, my Sprinter was actually final assembly in Germany, and I think they cost the same. So I'm not really totally sure how this all works, to be honest. And maybe it was just because it's an RV conversion, you know, for one of these van life things, that it doesn't apply for like a cargo particular version. But basically, yeah, there's the chicken tax, and it makes it so expensive. Mini tried this with the club van, which wasn't really that practical of a vehicle. I think there was only like 60 or 70 sold, but they had massive taxes on them. And yeah, but I don't think it needs that much range. It doesn't need that much range. It doesn't need fast charging. It doesn't need that much speed. This is all about taking your time, relaxing, going to see your country with good vibes. And yeah, really, I think it's going to be a great dog car. My guess is with the 111 kilowatt hour pack that we're expecting to see, it probably will do about 300 miles on a charge with that battery pack, maybe slightly under.
Yeah, 300 miles. I think in the camper version, people will want that kind of range too. You know, just feel like they have the freedom to go as.
It's not big enough for a camper though.
You think?
Yeah, because my Sprinter's 20 feet long and really tall, tall. And even that's like the bare minimum for a weekend trip.
But this, okay, so between two wings, it has a comment up here now. I owned a 1976 VW bus, huge fan of this, but I fear even the USA version will be too small. The old buses were fairly big. Retro buses were longer and taller than the planned USA version of this. Wow. Because I've seen some buses recently, and I've always struck how small they look to me. So, yeah.
20 feet minimum in length, tip to tip, is kind of what the standard is for these Class B RVs. And then they have a lot of height. So like, there's a couple things you could do. Like you'll find the hippies that are like, you know, that will camp out of this thing and put a little bed in there, but they're not going to have a stand up shower and a full heating system and, you know, a kitchen like my Sprinter does, which is kind of what you want when you're going out. And, you know, honestly, the best part about the Sprinter is it has four-wheel drive, pretty good ground clearance. I can take it up in the mountains. It's not electric, so I don't worry about making it anywhere. Although I do worry about my fuel tank capacity. It's only like 26 gallons. And even then, I'm like, can we make it where we want to go? And we've been considering putting an extended range fuel tank on it. It's going to be great. You're going to see these around Venice. They're going to be a status symbol. They're going to be owned by, you know, my parents' generation who had these things growing up, basically. And they're going to feel young again. They could charge $100,000 for this. They'll sell every single one they can make. And it's going to be awesome. It's VW's new Halo product.
Agreed. The price may start at 40 grand for the transporter or small battery, whatever. But if you want to start adding specs and two-tone colors and et cetera, they can charge whatever they want, I'm sad to say, because they'll sell every one of these.
Right.
Agreed. And with the larger battery, longer wheelbase, there's going to be all-wheel drive option here in the U.S. The price is going to creep up there. It's not going to be the $40,000-$45,000 van that people are hearing about today. But as you guys have both said, you know that really they'll sell them. There's enough buyers out there that play in that sandbox, and they'll probably sell everyone they make.
It's just got such a universal kind of capability. You know, I can see it becoming like a really big delivery vehicle in town. I mean, this could cover any amount of different kind of cargo sizes and different
but
things.
But then an e-transit would be significantly cheaper because of the taxes, and it has a lot more room.
Yeah.
Oh, an e-transit's like twice the size of this thing.
But what's the range in the e-transit is like 125 miles?
Delivery vehicles, yeah. I mean, this isn't, you know, where are you going to deliver stuff? I don't think that's this car's purpose, not in the U.S. And I think Volkswagen recognizes that.
Okay. Well, how about minivan? Because that's the other market I see it that's taking.
Yes, there it is.
Yep. Yeah. That's the market. It's the family hauler. This is going to replace the old Odysseys, Siennas. This is the new cool van.
I think it's going to feel so much better to drive this than a minivan. I've driven a minivan. I really hate how they feel to drive, front wheel drive. And just,
have you driven a Kia Carnival though?
I have not.
They actually are pretty good.
No, the last one I drove was a Dodge Caravan probably.
Hey, that's the fastest version of the vans. We've track tested a few of these things and the caravans are usually the quickest.
The one I drove was not the quickest. It was kind of dog slow and just like understeery and... that's
what family haulers, that's what people care about.
But but I don't know. You drive one, so you drive a family Hollow like that, but then you take something like this for a test drive, like an all-wheel drive, this thing is going to be amazing. It's going to have great feels, good power, good, just feels so balanced and just fun to drive. I think people will be really impressed if they can actually get behind the wheel to try one out.
I just hope they make it super soft and comfortable.
I love all these interior shots we're looking at. So there's lots of little plug-ins. There's lots of room. There's the lights, what do you call
ambient ambiance?
Yeah.
Ambient lighting, different colors. The textures of the seats and all the different surfaces looks pretty interesting, you know.
But that's not confirmed for U.S. market yet.
Right. I'm sure it'll be...
I think we're only going to get the nice ones. I think Volkswagen is, and or at least should position this as the premium, you know, at least at launch, make this maxed out. I think $100,000 feels right to me. Just put the $100,000 sticker on it and people will pay it.
Man, that's a lot of money.
But it's got no direct competition. There's a Rivian R1S, which is not the same. There's nothing, you know, there's going to be
makes it desirable.
There's a Fisker 7-seater is coming, but look, like 7-seater long wheelbase in the US, $100,000. As long as you can spec it up, and you know, stuff like those, you know, it needs captain seats in the front that turn around. It needs all those nice features, because that center console we just saw on screen comes out. You can pop that out. It's a walkthrough, which is great, but you got to spin those chairs around if you want that camper style. So it needs some tweaks from the European spec, but I think they can do that. Put a big sticker on it, and as you know, I'm sad to say, the last thing we need is more expensive EVs. But that's the way to do this in the US.
Yeah, if you want a cheap EV, buy an ID4, and hopefully that price can come down. Like, not everything. We just need cheap options. We don't really have a cheap EV option right now. The Leaf is about as good as it gets, which isn't cheap enough. But this is a whole nother class of vehicle.
Right. I do like the front, the dash, the little shelves on the bottom and different layers and different colors. And
I hate that they retained, you can see from this picture, the fact that there's only two buttons for the windows and a little switch that switches to the rear windows. Nobody likes that owns ID4s. And they should have learned. They got a lot of feedback from customers that they didn't like it, and they didn't improve that on this. And that's a disappointment. They should have gone back to individual switches for the rear windows.
John, where'd that comment go? So John Check asks if this is big enough to haul my band equipment in. If I had a whole band, which I'm working on, I'm getting one. I have an upright bass player kind of who I'm working with sometimes. And I think that would be great with at least three people, and you can fold one of those seats down. So yeah, I think if I could make that work for like an overnight or a weekend gig, I don't think I'd want to do a whole tour in something like that. Yeah, not without maybe a trailer or something. I don't know. Then that would take a lot of range down. I don't know. Anyway, so the thing with the ID Buzz, I think, so there's a, before it launched, there's a lot of, we're looking at we're looking at it under wraps, and we couldn't really tell. It looked like the shape had changed a little bit from the concept, and you know, we were worried that it wouldn't really fulfill the promise of the original concept, which really got a lot of attention and created a lot of buzz for the vehicle. So I did a little poll on Twitter a couple days ago. I don't, Martin, do you have that little image that I stuck in the team's chat? Yes. Wow, you're so fast. So this was the big... So if you're watching this on YouTube, you can see I've got like just the front end of the profile shots. And basically, it's just a small difference, really. It's not as bad as I think I thought. The hood protrudes a little bit farther on the production version than it did on the concept. Yeah, I got a cargo version of the concept there. And yeah, just so that plane from the windshield to the nose is like a little nicer, I think, closer to the original bus. And so it's got like a little bit of a snub nose on the production version, which puts it almost in Chevy Astro van territory, but I think not quite. So anyway, this was like it seems like a small thing, right? But I don't know. So I put a poll up on Twitter asking if the new ID Buzz successfully fulfills the promise of the concept. And I had 94 respondents, so it's not, you know, very scientific not a huge poll, but 80.9% of 94 respondents said yes, this is good, which
I agree. You know,
I was like, okay, all right. I think they actually did it.
Yeah, they did.
I don't know.
I didn't even think it was a question anymore. Things amazing.
Right. I mean, I wanted to revisit that because, you know, there's so much talk about that leading up to this reveal that, you know, I thought it was worth at least taking a look at.
I just can't wait to see these things with surfboards on them, on the coastline in California, in that yellow color. It's going to be the coolest thing ever.
I believe you can put like 200 kilograms on the roof.
Yeah, and you can tow 1,000 kilograms as well.
Oh,
what's that in American?
I don't know.
2 1/4 pounds of ice. It's like this. My mom used to say, 2 1/4 pounds of jam weighs about a kilogram. Mm-hmm. So you take your 200, that's 400. So maybe 450. I don't know. I'm not very good at math.
Yeah. No, I get the rough comparison. I just didn't know if we had imperial numbers.
Mm.
Right.
Yeah. So really quick, Nils corrected me before. I was complaining that it has the same two window switch as the ID4. And he said, well, it doesn't have rear windows, which it wouldn't. The vans with the sliding doors, the windows won't go down. So,
oh yeah.
So I thought I was being slick. What's that,
Kyle? Why don't they go down?
Well, if you many minivans or pretty much all minivans, that's the doors on the side, they're fixed.
No, I know, but why? Yeah, why does it have to be that way?
Yeah, it must be the, you know,
because of the sliding door
can't lower.
Maybe the sliding door mechanism.
Right. Why doesn't? Yeah.
Interferes with where the glass would need to slide down to.
The door mechanism, you know, how it slides.
We put a man on the moon. We can figure out how to make the windows of a minivan go down.
But there's one other thing I noticed where they changed from the ID4 was the gear shifter. If you notice the ID4 has like a BMW i3 gear shifter. It's like almost an exact copy of it. And I like that. You know, it's on the start. You push it forward. You pull it back to reverse. I think it was really functional. But they went back to like a regular conventional stalk on the steering column for the gear shifter, which is interesting.
But I think it still rotates.
Yeah, I think it's still rotates.
It probably still rotates, but it's not that same like small, compact twist gear shifter that the ID4 has.
Right.
And it's interesting because they you can obviously see that they did bring a lot of ID4 interior look into this vehicle. It's very ID-ish. You know, the buzz, they did it in a retro style, but you can, you know, when you get in it, you immediately think, you know, ID3, ID4, just, you know, with a little bit of an upscale and retro feel.
Mark Rollins, who's watching us on Facebook, says you can lower the windows on the sliding doors of at least one minivan, I believe the Toyota Sienna. Somebody else mentioned JKEV mentioned the Dodge Caravan windows go down.
I bet this will have windows that go down in the back, would be my guess. And they're going to use the same rear switch. But fun trick for anyone who owns an ID4, just hold the rear button down for like 2 seconds, and then the driver's window controls all the windows at once. So it's not that annoying.
Sweet. Of course. So we saw the passenger version of the ID Buzz, and then they also had the cargo version there. Which they call the ID Buzz Cargo for obvious reasons. It comes with or without a divider between the passenger and cargo area. And if you get the divider, there's an optional window that you can get so you can see what's in the back, or you keep an eye on your livestock if you're carrying goats or something.
You're putting goats in a van now?
Some people put goats in their vans. Hey.
I love that. That's the first thing that came to your mind, which is probably something I would do, is put goats in this thing.
Yeah, I was trying to think of an animal real fast, and that, you know, I do have friends who like their goats. So
yes, goats are hilarious. I drive by this guy's house, and the goats are always on his roof.
They all right,
climb around everywhere. It's amazing.
Right. Okay. So let's move on. We better get moving along. So in other news, Chevy teased its upcoming electric Blazer, and so let it be known there will be a super sport version of it, which they will call the Blazer SS. It was originally announced at the same time as the Equinox EV, which they showed us the Equinox EV in regular LT trim and sporty RS trim. I think RS stands for rally sport, maybe. I don't know. Really sporty. For the Blazer EV SS, they're only showing us a clip of the charge port, which seems to have an maybe overly complicated opening mechanism. And they showed us the six-spoke wheel with the letters SS in red printed at the end of one of the spokes for a bit of an accent. It's not a whole lot, I know. They're saying that it will be available, though, in the spring of 2023, so like a year from now. That's not far off. And hopefully we'll be seeing the whole thing, you know, maybe as soon as this summer. So Chevrolet is GM's most affordable brand, so it's good to see it producing EVs to go along with like the expensive Hummer EV and Cadillac Lyriq. Finally, we're getting to something, you know, the average, more average consumer can afford. So the Equinox EV will be out this fall, and so the bigger Blazer will be the second Chevy built with the Ultium architecture. Not sure if there's a whole lot to discuss here, really, but Tom, any thoughts about this motorized charge port door or bringing back the SS name?
Well, I mean, I don't think that's a surprise that they're going to do a Blazer SS. I mean, the whole line is going to be electrified. It's just a matter of when. But I agree with you. Way too complicated. You don't need that many moving parts in a charge port. I mean, you know, I'd be surprised if that in that iteration makes it to production. We'll see. But it's just too many things that can break. This thing opens and closes many times, sometimes multiple times a day. Right. It's not like a regular gas flap where once a week you know you're popping it open. So you know, you've got to deal with ice, you've got to deal with all kind of issues that can break that. You don't want a charge port that complex. It looks cool, but you know, for practicality, it's probably not the way to go, in my opinion.
Right. I think Elon Musk says the best part is no part. This has like things that break down, things that can go wrong.
Look at all those parts. You can there's too many things that'll break.
The Cadillac Lyriq has a little fancy motorized door too, doesn't it?
Yeah, I was going to ask, is this actually on the Lyriq platform or is it a different platform than the Lyriq?
I think it's probably the same platform.
So they might just be using the same mechanism from the Lyriq and then they just have the plastic bits cut out differently.
Yeah. I need to see how the Lyriq one. I know there's a video of the Lyriq port charge port door opening. I'm just not sure if it does that same motion, which would mean if it didn't do the same motion, they would have to,
Then it's a whole nother set of parts. But right. I think this has an opportunity to do really well in essentially the central part of the US. The Blazer is a really hot seller. And, you know, you go to Michigan, these things are on every corner now. I don't know why it's so regionally based, but they're very popular in that area. And having an electric version of this is going to be pretty cool. Will they have a non-SS version or is it called the Blazer SS only?
I think there'll be a non-SS version. There's got to be. Yeah. I think they're just teasing it with the SS to let them know there's going to be like a sporty version of it, which is going to be great because I'm sure the regular version is going to be already like a nippier than the regular like internal combustion version of it. So we're looking at the internal combustion. Right, because it's not really – is the internal combustion one front-wheel drive?
You can get all-wheel drive, but it has like a 3.6 liter V6 and like a 10 speed, I think. And it's just like always shifting gears and it has to rev all the way out to make power and having an electric drivetrains. And it's a good looking vehicle.
Right. It looks good. Yeah.
I still think Chevy missed the opportunity to take Blazer and go after Bronco.
Yeah.
You know, and I think they really, you know, they just made this sort of mom car. But, you know, for the car, forgetting the name, it's not a true Blazer, in my opinion. It's a good looking vehicle.
Yeah, no, I think it is too, and it'll be interesting to see when they do the electrification of it. You know, so take away the open grill section, and you know, just how they adapt everything. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see, and we don't have to wait that long to see it, so that's pretty cool. I don't know anything else. Anybody?
When does that arrive?
Was there a date on that?
A year from now.
Oh wow, that's quick.
Yeah, yeah, that's not bad. Like so this finally, we're getting into the good stuff with Chevy. The Ultium getting down there. All right. So speaking of grills and facelifts and things, in other news, the Volvo XC40 Recharge just got a bit of a nose job. The changes were quite slight. Martin, if you can pull that image up, you tell us whether there's even one change you prefer one over the other.
Oh, wow. Look, it looks totally different. Wow. I can't believe they've done that.
Did I give you a side-by-side? I'm not sure.
I'm going to bring it up in a minute. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure. It was late at night. I was putting that together. Yeah, I'm not sure if you can if you can prefer one design over the other, or even tell them apart. You know, if you looked at one, turned around, and looked at the other one, you know, I think the creases on the new one, there's a bit more, you know, in the way of creases. So the new
one
has
the new one. The new one's on the left, right? So it's got the same design as the C40, which brings it in line with the family. Okay.
Yes. Right, it's basically a C40 slapped on the front of an XC40.
Yeah, these little Thor hammer doobries down here.
The lights, and those lights are also adaptive LEDs, so that, you know, keep things well lit at night. And
but the lower ones, before.
These lower ones aren't.
No, the new ones under the Thor's hammer part.
Is that legal in the U.S. now?
It is now, I believe.
Well, hallelujah!
Passed. I don't think there's any car that implements it yet.
So this should implement it, though. That's cool.
Maybe
it comes with it. The hardware is available, so just turn it on.
They could just software update it.
Good.
So maybe the bigger news of this whole thing is that there's a front wheel drive version of the C40, which is the coupified version of the XC40. So what we're looking at now, but with a more coupish rear end. So there's a front wheel drive version of that. A single motor C40 recharge features a front mounted power unit, unspecified horsepower or torque ratings. It comes with a 69 kilowatt hour battery, anticipated range of around 270 miles on the WLTP cycle. So
69 kilowatt hour battery?
According to our text here on our post.
I'm pretty sure it's just going to be the same thing as a Polestar 2 front wheel drive underneath, which is the same battery as the all wheel drive, just with one motor removed, and they removed the wrong motor.
That's true. So that's like Polestar 2 is
74 kilowatt hour.
74. Right. Yeah. Maybe it's 69 usable. Is that?
No, I don't. I think it's more than that.
It's a good. No, you've got a good point, because when I read this story, and this is maybe a week ago or whenever it came out, there is something about it having a different power rating and a different battery rating to what I thought.
It's possible it's a different battery pack. Wouldn't that would be the story here?
Right.
If they're actually putting in something different. But can I complain for a second that they removed the wrong motor, because they already had a place for the rear motor?
Yeah, so I don't know why would they do that?
Yeah. It makes no sense. Literally no sense. And they're like, it's for packaging. And I said, no. I get it. You already have the rear motor. Just leave that one.
Yeah. I mean,
you already packaged it.
Yeah. You already got it there. Like, it is the dumbest decision in modern SP or any modern Volvo decision, I think, to do this, other than to not bring the Volvo V90 T8 plug-in hybrid to the US. But that's... no one cares.
So other maybe older, more regular listeners have heard us talk about this a little bit before. But so front wheel drive internal combustion cars, they have the motor. There's a reason why they have the front wheel drive, because the motor is over the front wheels. It gives you more traction. But in an electric vehicle, the weight is evenly distributed, you know, front to rear pretty much. So when you take off, the weight shifts to the rear, so that you get better traction on the rear. So,
there's no reason to make a front wheel drive EV from the ground up.
And with no motor hooked up to the front wheels, it just handles better. It just has a better feel to it, and you know, more turning radius possibly if it's not all wheel drive. So I don't know why you would do a front wheel drive electric vehicle, but they have. And a lot of people won't notice the difference.
Because everyone keeps saying it's better in the snow. It's not. I'm going to make a video on it.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah. That'd be just point it out, because it's a big change for a lot of people.
Yeah, I'll take a rear-wheel drive ID4 and a front-wheel drive Polestar 2. Hopefully I'll get one of those on a snowy day together, and then I'll drive them up a hill.
Volvo C40.
Yeah, but you can't get a rear-wheel drive one of those. Oh, yeah, right, C40.
Front-wheel drive.
Yeah. That is such a disappointment. And we knew it was coming.
Right. No price details yet on the front wheel drive C40. But if the battery pack is smaller and it's only front wheel drive, this might be a nice entry point for people to get into the electric Volvos, I think.
UK pricing starts at 44,000 for the single. We've got three trims. Okay. I forget what they are. There's like Ultimate, Exclusive, and something. But for the basic trim, single motor C40 starts at 44 grand, and that's above any of the limits for our subsidies and incentives. So that's what you'll pay. But over here, Volvo are really pushing the monthly price, whatever it's called, not Care by Volvo. What's the name of their monthly?
The subscription thing?
Yeah. So all the prices on the Volvo UK website are in monthly pounds. Huh. Not because of the lease, but because they're like, hey, is it insurance as well, mate? Like insurance, servicing, It's not monthly, it's 3 monthly, forgive me. But hey, change your car as often as you like. Here's the monthly price, give us a 3 month notice. They're really pushing that. I don't know how popular it is or not, and I'm curious to see if people like that idea of ownership.
I've never met anyone here in the US who's done it.
Yeah, I wonder. But I've got the Volvo UK site. I'll bring that up and show you guys. But so, I mean, it starts. It's cheaper than a Model Y. Although, yeah, Model Y is only dual motor here. That starts at 55,000, so 10 grand less than a Model Y if you don't want the extra motor in the comparison.
Right. I mean, some people just can't afford the extra expense, and this might.
I don't need it. I don't need it. I don't need the all-wheel drive ever. Weather is not here. We get a week of snow in January. That's it. You know.
Okay, I'm just looking at the battery packs here. Polestar 2, they claim it's a 78 kilowatt hour pack, 74 usable. This is likely a smaller and new battery pack.
Yeah, they've taken some modules out, or it's a new chemistry, or it's a new supplier.
Yeah.
So 69 kilowatts, 200. So it's 270 miles WLTP, so maybe about 250 EPA?
220.
You think that low?
Yeah. They're not efficient vehicles.
Right. Well, yeah.
No, like Polestar 2 is one of the least efficient EVs on the market.
Right. Mm. Even more than Audi e-tron? No.
Close.
Okay. And the Audi e-tron is a lot more heavy, so that makes kind of sense. Yeah. So Volvo says the battery can charge from 10 to 80% in approximately 32 minutes on a fast charging system. Yeah.
Can we just say how good the C40 and XC40 are, though, regardless of this stupid decision to remove the wrong motor?
Sure.
The cars, right, Dominic? We had the XC40 Recharge, the newer one, at our event.
Fun to drive.
Very good. And it was the crowd favorite.
It feels so good.
Everything.
Yeah, just nice planted feel. It's like
good UI, great usability, good image. It's the right image to pull up in a Volvo, isn't it? Because you're kind of... Right, because you're not pretentious, but it's a nice car.
But it's still like right up there as far as like, yeah, sophistication. I would say
it's the right look.
Right. I like the ID. I like the ID4 a lot too, but this is just a little classier, basically.
Yeah, it's the next one up.
Just starts at 44.8. Apologies, 44.8 for the Recharge Core. But again, the big bold number is the subscription number, and this is the Volvo UK website, and then it goes. It goes all the way up to 719 for the dual motor.
It's a lot of money.
Ultimate. Yeah, that's like £1,000 a month. $1,000 a month. Yeah.
That's a good chunk of change.
You could buy it, take the tax credit, at least here in the US, and sell it and make money.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Not that I know anyone who's ever done that before.
So we're getting pretty up close to the end of the show, and I had like a whole list of stories that we're not going to touch about. I didn't really want to get deep into that anyway, but I thought we should mention a couple things. XPeng is opening this P5 reservation books in 4 European markets. So these are all on Inside EVs. If you're curious, you can punch in XPeng in the search on Inside EVs and find that story. There's a Toyota BZ sedan or a BZ SDN. So it's electric sedan been spotted hiding a production body. I hadn't even heard about this coming. I just know about the BZ4X, which is a small Toyota crossover that's coming here soon. But there's a BZ sedan coming. And so that's something that the next Toyota vehicles will keep an eye on. What else? Kia will enter the electric pickup truck segment. I thought that was pretty neat. I don't know. They already sell a Kia Bongo 3 that's electric in Korea, at least. And that's like it looks like a Japanese K truck, the small little truck, trucks you see in Japan that I personally love. I wanted to import one actually and do a conversion on it, have that as my pickup truck vehicle. I thought that would be great. But Kia makes one. But with their import laws, I'd have to wait 25 years to bring it over here. But I guess they're going to have a pickup truck. And I would imagine if they do, they're going to bring it to the U.S. because we're a huge pickup market. They've also greenlit the EV9, that's a big SUV, to come here in 2023. That's also great. What else do we have here? 2023 Cadillac Lyriq is set to enter production on March 21st. It is the 11th today, so 10 days from now. That's awesome news. So hopefully we'll be driving that soon. And that's hugely looking forward to that, because that's like, besides the Hummer EV, that's like going to be like the start of all these other Ultium platform vehicles like the Equinox and Blazer. And it'll be great to see what that's all about. And yeah, Tesla confirmed the Giga Berlin Model Y deliveries will start March 22. Somebody asked how confident we were about the Giga Berlin Model Ys coming at the top of the show. And they've had a lot of setbacks and a lot of red tape. They've had to cut and recut a lot of issues and pushback from environmentalists trying to get them shut down, even after they have already spent $1 billion or whatever dollars building this thing. But it looks like it's going to happen for real March 22nd, so like 11 days from now. And that's going to be great. So anybody want to add anything to any of that?
The Chinese cars are still very well thought of over here in terms of quality, paint, how they're put together. So that whole thing about German cars being bolted together better than anything else is less of a myth than it ever used to be. So we'll wait and see.
It's notable that this is the first time XPeng has released one of their vehicles in multiple markets in Europe. You know, it's in Norway, Netherlands, Sweden, and Denmark, simultaneous launch. So this is, we're seeing the beginning of the Chinese invasion. You know, we saw this with Japanese cars back in the 70s, and we're really going to start to see electric brands from China start to proliferate across Europe and eventually here in the U.S. So it's notable that with every new vehicle that XPeng releases, it's bringing it over to Europe quicker than the previous version. And this is the first time it did a launch in multiple markets with one vehicle. So that's important to note.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So last week for our 100th episode, I ended the show with a little song and stuff. So this week we thought we'd continue that with Kyle on the harmonica.
What?
I'm kidding. No joke. All right.
Yeah, so, Martin's doing a drum solo next week.
All right. So that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs Forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tom Logney at Tomolog. That's with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. And I'm at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. And we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.